The Dias is a 100-foot steel-hulled workhorse of a vessel that once transported prisoners to Robben Island. Viewed from its rolling deck, the port city of Cape Town grows steadily distant as rain clouds enshroud nearby Table Mountain. For so many of the island's wretched inmates, this was their last view of the mainland and of freedom. Today, most passengers on the Dias are tourists and groups of school children, a generation of South Africans to whom apartheid, or the government-imposed system of segregation, is now an ugly chapter in their history books. With the exceptions of its years as a 17th-century Dutch trading station and a British garrison during World War II, this 1,400-acre island has always been a place of exile and misery. Over the last four centuries, it served as a leper colony, an asylum for the mentally ill, and a prison for slaves and criminals. Among the earliest political prisoners here were 19th-century Xhosa tribal leaders who refused to accept the authority of a foreign power.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is cell number 5. This is where President Mandela was staying. President Mandela stays in this cell for about 18 years full.
Nelson Mandela, another heroic Xhosa tribesman, would later be imprisoned here for resisting an oppressive government. The 6.5 by 9.5 foot cell where he spent almost 20 years of his life has since become something of a shrine, visited by nearly 1,000 people a day.
When you first arrive in prison, they body search you, they take your clothes, they take your money, they take all your particulars. They give you prison clothes. They also give you a number. That number represents your name. My name in those days, in the form of a number, it was 7/67.
Former political prisoners conduct the hour-long tours of the island, which cost about $20. Our guide, 56-year-old Patrick Matanjana, was sentenced to Robben Island in 1967 for terrorism. Prison officials segregated Matanjana, Mandela, Walter Sisulu, and other political prisoners in a special block of cells, fearing that they'd influence other convicts. Nevertheless, as Matanjana describes, prisoners found ways to communicate with each other, despite high walls between exercise areas and the watchful eyes of the guards, or warders as they were called.
We used to take a tennis ball, and then you cut it, you put a note inside. You make as if you are playing a tennis with your opponent. Poof, the ball, over the wall. What are they going to say? These people can't play tennis. They don't know that we are doing that deliberately. When those ones get the ball, they just take the ball and take the note out and throw the ball again. Finish. That's communication.
Similarly forbidden, yet even more important, was communication with the outside world. Prisoners would write letters on toilet paper, wrap them in plastic, and slip them into the mouths of their wives as they kissed during visits. Sympathetic clergy also helped smuggle out information by concealing convicts' letters in prayer books.
When the priest says Amen, he closes the Bible together with that note, the whole information is gone. And he's not going to be searched because he's a holy man. This is what prisoners used to do, because that letter is so important. That letter, it exposes our conditions here. This letter must not disappear because our life depends on that letter.
Conditions were indeed appalling at Robben Island when Nelson Mandela first arrived here. Prisoners slept on the floors on straw mats, bathed in freezing cold salt water, and lived in constant fear of cruel and capricious warders who were hired based on their reputations for brutality. Mandela and others slowly brought about change by drawing the attention of global relief and human rights organizations like the Red Cross and Amnesty International. Among Mandela's most ambitious goals was that all prisoners would receive an education.
You are actually standing now on the campus of the university once upon a time.
Former inmate Yasin Mohammed surveys the milky white lime quarry where prisoners spent their days digging. During Mandela's early years on Robben Island, inmates were not allowed to study. Still, those who wanted educations got them.
Those were doctors, lawyers, teachers, and journalists enhanced the education of the less fortunate. If you are doing, for example, mathematics, you will stand while working next to a mathematician, and he will teach you mathematics by making, like children, making drawings in the sand.
Eventually, all prisoners were given the right to study. In 1982, Nelson Mandela was transferred from Robben Island to Polsmoor Prison in Cape Town, then again 2 years later to nearby Victor Verster Prison, where he was finally released on February 11, 1990. The following year, the government closed down the prison on Robben Island and in 1997 declared it a national monument. In a speech given on the island during that year, President Mandela referred to Robben Island as, quote, a symbol of the victory of the human spirit over political oppression. It is for this reason, and no other, that Robben Island guide and former prisoner Patrick Matanjana returns to this place of painful memories every day.
I'm doing this not because I like it, not because I had to do it, but I'm doing this as a free man, so that even the next generation should be in the position to see that how condition used to be. They should know, they should see how their forefathers, their foreleaders used to be.
On Robben Island, off the shores of Cape Town, South Africa, I'm Tom Verdi for The Savvy Traveler.